The 5-minute rule says you give yourself 5 minutes to feel your emotions fully. And then when the 5-minute timer goes up, you say 3 very powerful words: can't, change it. An acknowledgement that I can't go back in time and change what happened, so there's no value in wishing that I could.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Jim here, looking really forward to our first podcast of 2022. And this is a very special guest. We've been friends for over a decade now. We met each other, I'd say, in the younger years, and he has taken off to really make quite an impact on the world. His name is Hal Elrod. He wrote the book, The Miracle Morning, which is an international bestseller, and he has a mission to elevate the consciousness of humanity one morning at a time. And if you're not familiar with The Miracle Morning, it is something that some of the top business experts, top personal development experts recommend. It really is a fascinating and powerful strategy that's changed mine and my family's life, and we highly recommend it. But not only is Hal an insight to upping your game in business and in life, he's a really good person and a really strong family man. We've had this bond of friendship where he's used our family board meeting strategy for his family. We've used the Miracle Morning. We've taught together. We've been at many events together. There's even some dad retreats. And he's really been a big part of our life. He survived two near-death experiences. One where he's pronounced dead at the scene from a car accident that he recovered from. We talk about that in the podcast. And secondly, overcoming cancer. I was actually with him the week before he got diagnosed. It came out as a surprise. He had less than 30% chance of living and had a miraculous comeback and is now cancer-free and doing his thing and just released the Miracle Morning movie, which I'll recommend to everyone. We are very tied in with the Miracle Morning group. Jamie and I were lucky enough to write the foreword to the Miracle Morning for families. Hal wrote the foreword to the Family Board Meeting book, which then went on to become a bestseller. He is an important part of our life, an important friend, and he's also a good father and husband, which is why we brought him on here. So definitely a great way to start the year. This is an important podcast. Let's get 2022 off on the right steps. And please listen to this interview with our good friend, Hal Elrod. Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Happy New Year. Exciting start to the new year. It's good to be back. And we are here with our old friend who we've known for a number of years. Thankfully, his Miracle Morning has blessed our family, and I know he's been able to use our family board meeting strategy, so it's been a very reciprocated relationship. We're really happy to have him in our lives, and it's great to have you here. Hal, welcome to the 18 Summers podcast.
Jamie and Jim, thank you for having me. It is a pleasure.
Yeah, now we were just catching up with you, and I think it's important, you know, coming into a new year. You're coming into the new year pretty excited because you're coming off a six-month sabbatical.
What was your inception for that? What led you to be focused on taking that time and space from your work?
Yeah. So there were really two things. There was an away from motivation, and then there was a toward motivation, right? The away from motivation, you know, I came off of, it's been 5 years since I was diagnosed with cancer, and I did chemotherapy for 3 years, over 800 hours of chemotherapy, most of that in the first year. And, you know, there's something they call chemo brain, and it's usually kind of like a joke, you know, oh, that's chemo brain. And once you suffer from it, you go, yeah, there's nothing funny about not being able to form your thoughts or have, you know, recall. So I started suffering from anxiety and even deep depression, which is like, that's the antithesis of my superpower, which is like, I can handle anything and I'm positive and I'm joyful and I'm grateful. But I literally felt like I lost control of my brain, of my mind. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I kept asking the doctor, hey, like, can we get off the chemo? It's not, you know, and he'd say, no, you got to keep taking it. And then I finally, May of 2020, I just said, I cannot take it anymore. And, you know, life is not worth living if this is how I feel. And so I got off the chemo against doctor's orders in May of 2020 and just kept on my natural holistic journey that I'd been on since day one. And I really thought, man, I can't function like I used to. So I need a break. So that was the away from goal, like moving away from the fear of not feeling capable to run my business and think and perform the way I always had. And then of course the two goal was I thought, what would life be like? This was actually the question that made me decide to do the sabbatical. I thought, what would my life be like if I woke up every day And instead of being stressed about all the things I got for work and having to check 30 emails and, you know, on and on and on, I thought, what if the only thing that I had to figure out was how to make my kids' day amazing and my wife's day amazing? What if that was all there was?
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't even know what that's like, you know? And so that was actually what that question is. I went, I've got to take a sabbatical. I got to take an extended period of time, decided on 6 months, and just be with them, just be with the family. And you know, we were just talking, but we actually moved out of the city and we bought 30 acres out in the country. So that was a huge shift. I always joke, it feels like one of those 80s movies where like the city folk moved out to the farm and all the blunders, like that's totally our life right now. We have chickens and we got, you know, we got a turtle and we got animals and we're gardening, all these things. And so that was part of, it was a perfect timing for the sabbatical, which is like, all right, we're moving out on the land. And on day one that we lived here, I thought, I'm not working for the next 6 months. And so, yeah, so that's what it's been like. And now I'm back to work and excited to be engaged in the Miracle Morning mission again.
Yeah. And you said, I know when we were talking before, you had a pretty big realization about the importance of your work to actually help your family in the overall lifespan. That was really interesting. You want to hit on that a little?
Yeah. And actually, I want to give a little bit of credit where it's due, which is the book. Have you read, I'd imagine you have, because you are a superior man, but have you read The Way of the Superior Man, Jim?
I have not.
Okay, that's a must read. It's the best book I've ever read on really engaging with your significant other in the way that she needs to be loved and supported and all those things. But anyway, the essence of one of the chapters is called Don't Use Your Family as an Excuse. And it talks about how, and it really resonated with me because they were my excuse of taking the time off, kind of, right? Like, well, I'm taking the time off because I want to be with them. And the chapter, it really talks about how the best thing you can do for your family is to live your purpose, is to be on mission every day to do what you were called to do. And yes, balance your time and spend quality time with your family, but don't be out of balance in that you're using them as an excuse to not courageously, boldly go out into the world and make the difference that you can make. And so when I read that, I was like, okay, when this sabbatical is over, because I was thinking about extending the sabbatical, I go, maybe I'll do another year, maybe I'll do a full year, you know? And then once I read that, I went, no, that's calling to me. I have a mission. You know, my mission in life is to elevate the consciousness of humanity one morning at a time. And I've had that mission for quite a few years. And I thought, I'm recommitting to it. I'm re-engaging to it. I'm doubling down. I'm taking it to the next level. And the thinking is that who you are, right, teaches your kids more than anything you can tell them. And how you live your life gives them permission to do the same. And so the idea is that when you define your purpose in life and you go after it boldly and courageously and you live fully and openly and, you know, do what you were meant to do, that makes a bigger impact arguably on your kids than, you know, playing a board game with them. But I like to do both, right? So there's a balance. But yeah, but that was the big takeaway for me was, you know, that the sabbatical was great, but it really taught me that getting back on mission, getting back on purpose is arguably going to make the biggest impact for my kids.
Wow. That's so powerful because when you think about it, it's hard for us to say to our kids, I want you to pursue your dreams and go after them when you're not.
Sure.
How are we going to, it's that old, you know, do as I do, not do as I say. And that's what's going to happen. So that's a really powerful insight.
It is. And it also made me think, you know, as you were talking, I wrote down, you know, where can people start? Because it sounds amazing. Like, okay, we got up super reflective. This was what was going on in my life. And I said, 6 months, you know, and then you were thinking about a year. And I think not everybody can do that. So then how incredible, you know, that with your Miracle Morning and with our board meeting strategy, you know, some of these things, it's like you start where you can start, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe you don't take a sabbatical and have this full focus and mind shift for 6 months, but you can take these principles and the inspiration that you're giving and kind of start somewhere.
Well, and let me speak to that because I've thought about writing a book on like something like the sabbatical life. And as I was coming off sabbatical, I thought, I want to redefine, reinvent my life so that the whole thing feels kind of like a sabbatical. And what I mean by that is the mindset, let me put it this way. Maybe somebody can't take 6 months off. I saved a lot of money for a long time to be able to set myself up to do that, right? But let's say you can't do that, but maybe you take a week vacation. Here's what makes it a true sabbatical that transforms your life. is that you don't watch Netflix for the entire vacation. You don't veg out on your phone for the entire vacation. You spend the vacation reading and learning and meditating and growing and reflecting and journaling. And you really go within to discover, who am I? What matters to me? What do I want my life to be like? What impact do I want to leave on my children? Who do I need to be to leave that impact through the way that I live, not what I, like you said, it's not what you say, it's what you do, right? If your kids are like, wow, you know, mom and dad, they were always living to the fullest, going after their dreams. They were lovers of life. They were passionate. They were helping others on it, right? Like, that's who the kids are going to become, you know? And so that's my point, is even if it's a weekend, right? It could be a weekend, but a weekend of real inner reflection. And I think that's almost what the Miracle Morning, now that I think about it, that's what the Miracle Morning is. It's an hour, or, you know, 30 minutes to an hour every day, where you are you're looking within, you're affirming who you're committed to being, you're meditating, you're visualizing, you're gaining the wisdom that you need to become the person that you need to be to create everything that you want for your life and for your family. So yeah, the Miracle Morning, now that I think about it, as I frame it that way, it's just kind of a daily sabbatical, right? Yeah.
It is, exactly. And that's exactly what I thought of when you were talking. And it also reminded me, you know, and it made me think of reflecting on our relationship. You know, Jim's dad recently passed.
Yeah, my dad passed on Christmas. You know, we got an extra 10 years with him, Hal, from the kidney donation. So it was sad, but we had no regrets.
And that was
We had an incredible extra decade together. Incredible. So there were lots of tears. There was lots of sadness. There was lots of catching up, but it was a memorable Christmas. And people, I was with some mutual friends of ours this past week, and they said, "How are you? How are you?" I said, "Oddly, I miss him, but I'm good. We have no regrets." And that's one where I actually really put trajectory and purpose and priority, me and Jamie together, with that relationship, because we didn't know 10 years ago if we'd get an extra year, but we got 10 extra years of high quality. And it really, that there is some serious peace of mind in taking that firm action towards something you really care about.
When it reminded you, which is where I was getting at with what Hal's saying, is that no regrets, you said, "Oh, you and I need to have, you know, we can't take 2 weeks away. We've got 4 children and 2 companies and all that jazz, but we're taking the next 4 days after our interview with you tomorrow. So 4 days, it's all about just us, because we've got a 5th one on the way." Through adoption,
we're
she'll be arriving
any
day. A
little girl who's being born in about a month.
Oh my gosh.
Soon.
How special. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you.
But just thinking of what you're saying, like, and that's really to combine the two things, your actions and exactly what you're saying, Hal, is that he was like, we need like whatever amount of days it is that it can be like just us for just this many days. And that's really what you're saying. And it's really what you teach, like you said, for that 1 hour every day, like get straight.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that, Hal, too, one thing I've always appreciated about you, and Jamie and I were talking about that this morning when we were like, "Oh, we're interviewing Hal today." You've added expertise to things that are already there. You're like an assistant expert to the experts. And let me explain what that means. Like, first of all, there were morning routines, right? There were morning routines out there, but you took it to a whole different level, really studying onto things that really made a difference, things that had studies behind it to show results. And you formulated the Miracle Morning. Now, other people 10 years ago, there's morning routines. And you blew that away. In another example, the most powerful thing I've ever seen is in one of your writings when you were going through the cancer treatment. And one of the doctors said to you, "Yeah, Hal, you can eat whatever you want as long as you do the chemo." And being Hal, you said, "No, that's not what I've studied. That's not what I've researched. That doesn't trust into my intuition or gut. I'm going to do it differently." Do you want to speak to that talent? Because that really is a talent, Hal, that I've seen you. You're not afraid to step out and say, "I'm going to study up and become an expert in this. And I'm not trying to, you know, sideline or downplay any other experts, but I'm going to really work hard for what's best for me." I mean, it's an incredible talent if you want to talk to that.
Yeah, there's so many layers to that. Okay. The first is ownership, is taking complete responsibility for your life, right? So I think that we tend to defer to the experts, right? "Well, I'm going to listen to the expert and whatever they tell me, or whatever they do, because I'm not an expert." And actually, it goes further back. The first time this really came up, when I was 20 years old, I had my first life and death experience, right? I was in a head-on collision with a drunk driver at 80 miles per hour on the freeway. I was found dead at the scene. My heart stopped for approximately 6 minutes, broke 11 bones, spent 6 days in a coma, was told I would never walk again. And I told the doctors, I might have not said it directly to the doctors, I think I said it to my parents, but after the doctors said I wouldn't walk again, I said, look, mom and dad, the doctors might be experts in medicine or whatever they do in there all day. I said, but they're not experts in me. And they may say that I never walk again, but how, they don't know. I said, so in my mind, I'm going to put everything I have mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically into walking again while I simultaneously accept that I may never walk again. And to me, it's a really important way to approach life where you expect the best in everything that you do, and then you accept the rest, whatever happens. Yeah. So that way you can live in a state of optimism and positivity, not delusion, right? Not where you're hoping something's going to happen that cannot happen. But if there's an inkling of possibility, well, that's where my inner, I'm going to have unwavering faith that I can achieve or overcome or create this thing in my life. And if I don't, because things don't always go the way you want, right? And like Garth Brooks, you know, the wise philosopher said, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. Yeah. But then you accept it and you're at peace with it. I know we might talk more later about that, you know, my can't change it philosophy, but that's kind of that mindset. And so, so that's the first piece around expertise is you are an expert. And in our society, we've been conditioned since we were little kids to quote unquote, trust the experts. And that removes responsibility from you. It removes critical thinking from you. And right now with what's going on in the world, you know, I'll tell you, trusting the experts has not played out for a lot of people. And when I asked the doctor, I said, you know, when I first met my oncologist and I had studied health for, you know, at that point, 10 plus 17 years, I had studied health and diet. It was a big part of my life. And so I knew a lot, and I asked the doctor really to kind of almost test. I wanted to hear his perspective, but also just test, like, all right, is this guy really looking out for my health?
Yes.
Because if he is, diet is the foundation, no matter what medicine you take. Sure. And I want you guys to think about that. If your quote unquote health experts are not asking you or tell, you know, what are you eating or telling you, boost your immune system, eat healthy foods, don't eat unhealthy foods, right? Lower your sugar, get vitamin D, exercise every day. Because if you do that, then you're in such a healthy position that your body is able to do what it's designed to do, which is to heal yourself, protect yourself, et cetera. So when the doctor, when I said, what role does diet play in my recovery? And he said, it doesn't matter. I realized that A, he either isn't actually looking out for my health, or B, he doesn't know what he's talking about in regard to the impact that diet plays in our body's ability to heal itself. Either way, I've got to be careful at what level I trust this so-called expert.
Absolutely.
Because I have more expertise around diet than he does. Yeah. And I'll tell you, it was heartbreaking to me when I went down to the cafeteria at the hospital and they served lots of cake and pie and pizza and hamburgers and soda. Foods that should never go into the human body, but they didn't serve a single organic item that was grown from nature.
Wow.
So again, if you're listening, I'm going a little bit further on this part because I think it's an important paradigm shift for people to have that our medical system is dysfunctional. And it is designed, you know, I've heard it said, you know, it's not healthcare, it's sick care, right? But anyway, so I just think it's important to really understand because, and when I went in for chemo, one last thing I'll share on this.
No, please.
Okay, I told my doctor, I said, I think it was that same meeting. And first time I'm meeting with the oncologist and he says, you know, you've got a cancer. He said, your survival rate is 20 to 30%, right? So it's a 20 to 30% chance of surviving if you get acute lymphoblastic leukemia that I had. Which if you look at the other side of that, that's a 70 to 80% chance you're going to die. And right, so horrific odds. I told him, I said, doctor, I said, look, I don't want to do chemotherapy. I don't want to poison my body. I want to strengthen my body so that it can heal. And I said, so can you support me in you know, beating or fighting or healing this cancer naturally and holistically? And he said, Hal, I respect your, you know, that you want to do that. He said, but you don't have that luxury. You don't have a slow growing tumor. Because at that time, my heart was failing, my kidneys were failing, and my lung was collapsed. And I went from being completely healthy to being close to death within about a week and a half. And he said, Hal, you were healthy 2 weeks ago. Now you're, you know, your organs are failing. He said, if you wait another week, you'll probably be dead. And my wife's there squeezing my hand as hard as she can. I'm getting, you know, I'm a little upset with the guy because I, you know, I'm like, I figure he's kind of scaring me into chemotherapy or whatever. So we went home. I said, give me 24 hours to do a little research. We researched and we found out, oh, he's not exaggerating. Even I called some of the best holistic doctors in the country. They said, your best bet is chemo. He's right. You're the cancer acts so fast. The only chance, there's nothing we could do and test to see if it works. The best bet you have is chemo. And that just went against every fiber of my being and philosophy on like making my body strong and healthy. So I did chemo, but I from day one, and this is advice for anyone listening that has any health challenge, that has cancer or knows someone with cancer, or, you know, there's the odds are, what do they say? Like half of us are going to get cancer at some point in our lives. Hopefully it's not true. But my decision was this, okay, if I guess I have to do chemo, but I'm going to do every holistic, I'm going to research and do every holistic practice known to man as if I were not doing chemo and my only chance of survival were these holistic practices. And so I did the best of both. And I detoxed my liver from chemo with supplements, with coffee enemas, with a lot of things that my oncologist knew nothing about. And so, and one resource I'll share is chrisbeatcancer.com. Chrisbeatcancer.com was one of my favorite resources. He beat cancer naturally and he's interviewed, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of the best natural holistic doctors on the planet. And that was one of my main resources for that area of my life. So yeah, but again, becoming my own expert, reading every book I could, studying, right? You know, and then applying it.
It's so powerful. It's so powerful and it makes all the difference. And that's what I wanted to get out there today. I think it's an important message for all of our families. It is not only okay, it is very, very good to question the experts. It is a good thing. I mean,
well, to realize that's real growth. The expert, like you're sure. We're the expert on our relationship. We're the expert on our children's well-being, you know, everything from advocating for them in school to advocating for them at their own doctor's appointments to in friendships. And the thing is like you're saying, just to really and truly take that ownership that we are the experts for ourselves and for our families, you know, and sometimes people like to share their ideas or get, you know, but ultimately, you know, where it lands, you know, what's right for you.
And it's not just the relationships are important, but as you can see, I think it's good that we're getting, this is life or death. Now, when we were preparing for donating a kidney to my father 10 years ago, Jamie and I have a very holistic approach. So I asked the Mayo Clinic where I went, you know, I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to do meditation. I read about these meditations where you actually talk to your organ.
Yeah, I love it.
You're going away. You're coming back to a place that you came from.
And he had a name.
I had a name. My dad's best friend growing up was named Lefty Houlihan. I was given my kidney, the left kidney. So I named him Lefty. And I said, look, Lefty, this is where you're going. We did acupuncture and meditation and prepared with certain things. I was fit as a fiddle going in. And two things happened that were interesting. How we actually, my mom and Jamie had a scare that they started calling them over the intercom about an hour and a half into surgery.
Which was an hour and a half earlier than it was supposed to be.
At least it's usually a 4+ hour surgery. So 90 minutes into the surgery, they're calling them over the loudspeaker. They're writing down, they think that my dad's passed away in the surgery. They get in there and the doctor's eating cookies. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. The surgery was incredible. The kidney latched on and started producing urine right away. We didn't even jumpstart it. It's one of the fastest kidney transplant surgeries they've ever done at the Mayo Clinic.
Wow.
And to top it all off, so we were like, yes, we don't need to tell anyone. We know it worked, what stuff we did. What was interesting, the day we were leaving, I was offered 3 weeks of OxyContin.
Yeah.
And I said, I have two friends that were addicted to that when it first came out. Absolutely not. We got home, I flushed it down the toilet. I took extra strength Tylenol, went back for my checkups. At week two, they offered me another month's worth of OxyContin. And I said, absolutely not. I don't need it. And again, this is, do I not respect a great place like the Mayo Clinic and the fact they took an organ out and gave my dad another 10 years? No, but it's okay to question and put our own spin on our own expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. You can be grateful for, you know, for like, I'm grateful for all of my doctors, but, and also aware that they have a very, very narrow form of education, right? That is, you know, I believe sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies, right? So that's why their go-to is, oh, you have, what are your symptoms? Here, let me write you a prescription for that, right? That's the go-to. Not, oh, well, what's your lifestyle like that might be causing you to not sleep, right? And think about that before you give them a sleeping pill. It's like, what are your stress levels? You know, what do you eat during the day? Do you eat late? Oh, you eat late at night? No wonder you can't sleep. Your body's trying to digest food. Like, it's really simple, basic things that that seem to, you know, elude a lot of the experts.
Yeah, those little bit of extra questions. And what I've learned is doctors care, but you might not be their most important patient, but you are your most important patient.
Sure.
You're going to give it a little more attention. So I know we wanted to talk about one of our favorite sayings when we were with Hal this summer.
Yeah. When we were with you this summer and just, man, we really enjoyed that time together and your talk, because we've seen you talk and I've heard you, but it was a little different. So even, you know, for those of our listeners that have, you know, followed you or, you know, watched you, it was just really, it's always great to even watch you again because I learn something new each time. Can't change it. And what's hilarious, I do love tattoos. So I loved your story when you said that she came up to you and you had a big fan that tattooed can't change it on her body. But can you tell us a little bit about, you know, two things? One, you know, you set that timer, right?
Set
the timer, you have all the feelings you want to feel, and then you land, I can't change it.
Yeah. This has been the most life-changing concept, arguably, that I've ever learned. When I was 20 years old or 19 years old, I started a career in sales at Cutco. And my mentor on day two of training, my mentor, Jesse, he taught us all the 5-minute rule. And the 5-minute rule is, he said, look, when you're in sales, it's like a microcosm for life, but it's amplified. Like, you're going to face more rejection than you would in a normal day, more disappointment than you would in a normal day. He said, so, but there's no point, he said, in dwelling on it once it's happened. Once it's in the past, you can't change it. So he taught us that when something happens that is, you know, that causes you to feel upset or sad or, you know, whatever the emotion, the painful emotion is, he taught us to set our timer on our phone for 5 minutes. And the 5-minute rule says you give yourself 5 minutes to feel your emotions fully. And then when the 5-minute timer goes up, you say 3 very powerful words: can't change it. An acknowledgement that I can't go back in time and change what happened. So there's no value in wishing that I could, in wishing it were different, in resisting my reality. So I learned that when I was 19. And then a year and a half later, I had my car accident. And I came out of the coma 6 days later. And I'm, you know, wondering, where am I? How'd I get here? And I'm told, Hal, you have 11 bones, you know, hit by a drunk driver. The doctors say you're probably never going to walk again. And thankfully, I had practiced this 5-minute rule for a year and a half consistently in the can't change it philosophy. And so, you know, I'm sure it wasn't 5 minutes. It was probably more like 5 days, but it was very quickly that I went, okay, well, I was in a car accident. Okay, got it. Can't change that. I might never walk again. Okay. So if I'm in a wheelchair the rest of my life, then I will not be able to change that if that is the outcome. What can I change? And it always comes back to, I can choose my attitude. I can choose my mindset. I can choose my inner experience. I can choose how I feel, what I think about, what I focus on. And so I told my dad, I said, Dad, if I'm in a wheelchair the rest of my life, I have decided I will be the happiest and the most grateful person that you have ever seen in a wheelchair, because I'm in a wheelchair either way. Why would I let that determine my quality of life or my emotional well-being? And it got to the point where the doctors called my parents in for a meeting. They thought I was in denial and that I was delusional. That's what the doctor told my parents. And I explained, I'm like, no. I just live my life by the 5-minute rule. And it's been 2 weeks since my car accident. So I'm long past my 5 minutes to feel sorry for myself. I can't change it. And if you're listening to this right now and you're watching and listening and you're going, well, yeah, okay, you know, that you're in a horrific car accident, how does this apply to everyday life? For me, I apply this to everything. And one of my favorite examples that we can all relate to is traffic. You know, imagine you leave the house late because your alarm didn't go off or your kids were running around or whatever. But imagine we leave the house late and we have somewhere that we need to be, And being late is not ideal. It's going to have a negative consequence. We're going to disappoint somebody. Maybe we're going to get in trouble, or, you know, our boss will be upset, whatever. So you think about this. How do you spend your time in the car when you're running late? Let's say you're running late and then you hit traffic, you know, and you're thinking, no, not today. Of all days, I'm running late. I need to be there on time. And now there's traffic. Come on. What is there, an accident up there? Right. And if you think about it, you spend your time in the car. Let's say you're stuck in traffic for 30 minutes. Most people, and I was guilty of this before as much as anybody, spend those 30 minutes in emotional turmoil. You're stressed. You're frustrated. You're regretting that you left early. You're replaying the events of the morning. You're imagining the negative consequences of the future. You're resisting the reality that is happening in front of you. And I realized, when I first started doing this, I would, you know, I'd drive and go, oh no, dang it, there's traffic, I'm gonna be late. Then I go, wait a minute, the 5-minute rule applies to this. Can't change it applies to this. I can't change that I'm in traffic for the next 30 minutes or that I'm gonna be late. But guess what I can do? I can choose to enjoy every single moment in this car. And that to me is a microcosm for life. You can't change the unchangeable, which is everything that's ever happened up until this moment. Even if it happened 5 minutes ago or 5 seconds ago, but you can choose to accept it, be at peace with it, and enjoy every moment of your life. And when I had cancer, it was the same thing. The day I was diagnosed with cancer and told I had a 20% chance of surviving, I don't need 5 minutes anymore. I've done this for so long. To me, it's like 5 seconds. I'm like, son of a, really, I have cancer? Okay, well, I can't change it. I just immediately go right to can't change it. I just skipped the 5 minutes because I've done it for so long. And I go, well, okay, so what does that mean? I have cancer. All I can do is the best I can do with it. And I can maintain a positive attitude. I told my wife the day I was diagnosed, sweetheart, it's the same as my car accident. I imagine this is going to be the most difficult time in my life and in our lives. And I'm so, you know, and I said, I'm so sorry. If I could change anything, it would be that you and the kids have to go through this. That killed me, right? Because I can control my own thinking. It wasn't as easy for them. Sure. So that was hard. But I said, personally, sweetheart, I promise you, I will be the happiest and the most grateful I've ever been while we endure the most difficult time of our lives. And I'll do that for me. I'll do it for you. And I was, you know, and it was a painful experience. But I don't know, have you guys seen the Miracle Morning movie yet?
Yes, I have. I recommend it to the whole tribe out there. Make sure
everybody listening, it's really an incredible film. Go to miraclemorningmovie.com. Miraclemorningmovie.com. It was my journey spreading the Miracle Morning, and then all of a sudden I was diagnosed with cancer unexpectedly, and then you see me at my darkest hour, my lowest points, and then beating the cancer and prevailing. But there's a scene in there where I've had migraines for 11 days in a row because they gave me a spinal injection and they hit a nerve, and I am in horrific pain for 11 days. And in the scene, I'm bawling my eyes out. But what I say is, this doesn't change the fact that I am grateful for every moment, that I'm grateful for the pain I'm enduring, that there's some purpose in here, that if I overcome, or when I overcome this, I'll be a stronger version of myself. And that's true for all of us in the face of adversity. Every adversity that you face right now that you're enduring or that you have in the future, it's an opportunity to learn, to grow, to become better than you've ever been before. There's always a better version of ourselves on the other side of adversity if we accept it as it is, if we find that inner peace, if we focus on the positive and take it head on. And so that for me is can't change it. And I apply it to everything from traffic to, you know, you name it.
Yeah. Now you do a lot of modeling for your children. I mean, I know that they're such an integral part of, you know, every area of your life. Is there anything specific that you communicate differently more than just modeling? You know, for our families at home, so often us grownups have great rituals, rhythms, routines, things that work so well in our lives. And sometimes we forget to lean that on down to our children or translate it into kid-friendly language. So what do you do to instill these principles into your children in addition to mom?
So it's a great question because so if you look behind me on the wall here is the Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. And that's a book that I co-authored with our mutual friends, Mike and Lindsay McCarthy. I'm guessing, have you guys had them on the podcast?
We wrote the foreword.
We wrote the foreword.
Oh, yeah, duh. I knew that. Okay. And so recently they came out with a follow-up, which is the Miracle Morning for Parents and Families Companion Guide.
Yeah.
And this has been a game changer for my family. I want to be really clear. I get zero credit other than my name being on the book because I'm the Miracle Morning guy. This is their work. And it's seven exercises to do with your family. And so it's not really a book where you're like learning about a bunch of concepts. It's like exercise one, set your family values. Here's how you do it. Here's our examples. Here's the template. Fill it in, right? So it's just pure action, action, action. So the point is, the most valuable for us from that has been the weekly family meeting. And before Mike and Lindsay wrote that book, I had tried it and we had crashed and burned. We couldn't get buy-in from our kids. They didn't want to do it. My wife wasn't really into it. We tried and we failed. And once this came out and it gave me the step-by-step, the guide, we've been doing it now for the last, I think we started probably 2 or 3 months ago, and it's been incredible. And in fact, I'll just read off the agenda for our family meeting real quick. So number one, there's seven steps. Number one is the mindset reset. Get into an optimal state of mind to have a great family meeting. And we that was my wife's suggestion on family meeting number one, because the kids are like, we're doing this again. So she goes, hey, like, it's not going to work unless we're in a positive mindset. So we go one, I lead the meeting. So I go, actually, and that's an idea. I want to start having the kids lead them. But anyway, I go one by one. I go, hey, Ursula, how's your mindset right now? She'll go, it's great. And I go, Sophia, how's yours? And she'll go, it's great. I'm like, are you sure? Right. So we do a check-in with everybody. Hey, everybody's mindset on point. Awesome. Number two is gratitude. And I'm excited to share this with you because I've taught for a long time that there's two essential types of gratitude. There's most people I feel like experience intellectual gratitude, which is where if you ask somebody, hey, what are you grateful for? They immediately go to their head like a checklist and they go, family, food, that I have a roof over my head, but they're not feeling gratitude in their heart, in their gut, in their soul. They're not, in every fiber of their being, they're just checking it off in their head and it evaporates as quick as they read off the list, right? Yeah. So what we do is we all put our hands on our hearts for the entire gratitude, exercise, which takes usually a few minutes. And then one by one, each person shares something they're grateful for. And then I'll usually prompt everyone like, guys, can you feel that gratitude that mom's experiencing for what she just shared? And so in everybody, I'll say, let's close our eyes and feel that. So we all get to not only express our own gratitude, but actually experience the gratitude of each person in the family. So that's been an absolute game changer. Number three is bloom, thorn, and bud. And that's my wife's language. I don't resonate with it, but the kids like it. But it's basically bloom is something positive that happened in the last week. Thorn is something challenging you experienced. And bud is something you're looking forward to. If it were me, I would just say, what's like something positive, something challenging, and something you're looking forward to. But they like the thorn, bud. Number four is recite your family values. Remember the family. So we recite our family values. And usually we just take turns every week reading them out loud. And like their love, and so I'll give you just a few examples. The values we live by, love. We love and forgive ourselves and others as God loves and forgives us unconditionally and with compassion. We know that everyone, including us, makes mistakes, and we love ourselves and others through it all. Confidence. We believe in ourselves and know that we are capable of anything we put our minds to. Kindness. We treat others as we want to be treated. We also don't talk about other people behind their backs and only say things that we would say if they were here with us. Integrity. We do what we say we're going to do when we say we're going to do it, whether we feel like it or not. And in doing so, people know they can trust us and we can trust ourselves. So we go through our family. Those are a few of our family values. We go through those. Then we review our family goals. And this is from the McCarthys. Each one of us has a hard goal for the year that's really challenging and a fun goal for the year that's something we're excited about. So we each share how we're doing on those. And then we review the schedule for the week. We just look at the schedule. What do we got coming up? What are we going to do on the farm? And then number seven is just cover anything else. Is there anything else that we missed or that anybody want to bring up a topic or a challenge you're having this week? Anything? And we try to create a forum where the kids can say, Mom, Dad, I don't like how you've been doing this. So we want to create a safe space for them to express themselves. And then we do a closing ritual where we sit for 2 minutes in silence and we hold hands in a circle and we just meditate for 2 minutes. Wow. So that's been a ritual that has absolutely been a game changer for us.
That's nice.
I love it.
And again, you can find it in the Miracle Morning for Parents and Families playbook.
Yeah. And our tribal, we just were on the launch series with that. And I know we blasted that out to our whole group. So hopefully some
awesome.
People are doing that. I think the whole point of that is, man, there's a lot of good information out there. Like the Miracle Morning, incredible. But if it sits on your shelf and you don't put it into practice daily or the family meeting weekly, it's not going to work. And we seem to keep looking for the next thing. And what I say to people is go back and get clean. You know that brushing your teeth every day gets your teeth pretty good. Don't try to find something else. Let's make sure we have that under control before we go to the next. Yep. So Miracle Morning, family meeting. I mean, I think this is
family board meeting.
Family board meeting, of course. Yes, we have a pretty good following on that for sure on here. So, but I think just a couple of powerful rhythms. I tell people for family happiness, for business success, you're only a few rhythms away. And obviously we always include yours. And man, we're so grateful that our friendship and what we do. I know we
can
talk
feel
on
that.
Yeah, I'm sure that hopefully, you know, that was heartfelt. You know, I think we've had some incredible speaking experiences together, some incredible dad's retreats. And, you know, we appreciate your friendship and look forward to many more years. And speaking of many more years, first, we're going to end with how can people reach you? And then I got our finale question, which I'm really looking forward to asking you. How's the best way to people get in touch with Hal?
Learn more about you, follow you.
Miracle Morning movie, anything that you want to share.
Yeah, I've got halelrod.com, but it's really outdated, so don't even go there. We're working on updating it right now. But miraclemorning.com is the best hub. You know, you can find all the books there. You can find the movie there. You can find the app there. You can find the community, which is really the coolest part of the Miracle Morning, is we have a Facebook group with 300,000 people in it from 217 countries that wake up every day and support each other. And it's one of the most loving, supportive online communities that I've ever seen. So go to miraclemorning.com. That's the hub for everything else.
I love it.
Awesome.
Love it.
Thank you.
Well, how our question during the pandemic started to become, everyone asked, what would you tell your 21-year-old self? And that's great. But in the pandemic, when we went into this, no one knew what was happening. We needed greater wisdom. So Jamie and I started asking this question to ourselves and then to our guests. And it was, what advice would your 75-year-old self give to you today and to others? So again, this would be Hal down the road, you know, still having a great time working the farm, you know, but a wiser version of Hal. What advice do you think 75-year-old Hal would give to us today?
Yeah, I think it came up for me the other night as I was falling asleep, which is when I usually have all my breakthroughs and I have a journal by the bed and write them down. I realized that I've been living in a it's been subtle, but it's been kind of a constant state of fear for the last couple of years or year and a half, or maybe even longer. I don't know. And I think we all human beings, right? Fear is always a part of, you know, a part of our consciousness. But I realized that I've been holding back out of fear of, you know, the cancer created a fear of like, what if I die? What if I leave my kids without a dad? Back in 2008, when the economy crashed, I lost all my money. And that fear's never gone away, that even if you think everything's going great, there could be something that comes out of nowhere, a financial collapse, and you can lose it all. And that's never gone away for me as well. Yep. And I think just the state of the world right now, you know, what's happening, there's fears around that. So the advice was, Hal, completely let go of fear and be fully present to what a gift, what a miracle life is in every single moment. And what I realized about fear was that the things that we are afraid of aren't what actually cause our fear. It's we fear our inability, our perceived inability to handle the things that we're afraid of. Because think about that. Something you're afraid of, if you believed you could handle it easily, you wouldn't be afraid of it.
Yeah.
It's your perceiving that if that happened, I couldn't handle it. I'd be a wreck. So what I've realized is that anytime I start to experience fear, that's a trigger for me, a signal to affirm I can handle anything that comes my way with ease. And so I'm going to get back to enjoying this miracle of life that I am living right now. So I think that's the advice. Don't let this pass you by. We get one shot at this life and enjoy every moment.
I need to show you this. So when I was looking up saying, let me just, I got to see what's
going
on with Hal.
You just did a writing on this.
Look at my phone.
There you go.
Screenshotted what you posted the other day. And I was like, yeah, beware for I'm fearless and therefore powerful.
And I was like, we need to make that your screensaver.
So, that's awesome. Yeah, I love
as you're
it.
Talking, I'm like, it's we in read motion. That.
That's so incredible. So it's right there as my new screensaver for 2022.
I love it.
Now you know we fangirl you.
What's mutual?
How beautiful synchronicity is that? Like, that's awesome.
Totally.
What a great way to really end. Cool. Well, Hal, we love you, buddy. Always love to the family. Can't wait to see you again. Thank you for being on. Anything we can do, please let us know. And we'll look forward to having you on next time.
Love you guys, too. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Hal. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.